Good morning to everyone. Welcome to worship services and good Sabbath to each one as well. I'd like to begin today by reading a little statement here. One of the greatest and most significant building projects in the history of man was the construction of the temple by King Solomon. Now, we don't normally consider its importance in man's history because historians tend to not be religious, spiritual individuals. Therefore, the temple is not mentioned as one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, for example. It's not even mentioned among the great structures of the ancient world when you hear historians discuss these things. And that's because, as I said before, historians tend to not be religious individuals. But people who have a knowledge of the Bible and people who have a knowledge of man's history recognize that the temple's construction was important and vital. When Solomon finished building the temple, Yahweh appeared to him in a vision or a dream. And after he made the prayer in 2 Chronicles 6, down in 2 Chronicles 7, Solomon prayed to Yahweh, made a petition to Yahweh in 2 Chronicles 6. And down in chapter 7, beginning with verse 11, Yahweh answers. It says, "In this manner, Solomon finished the house of Yahweh and the king's house, and all that came into Solomon's heart to make in the house of Yahweh and in his own house, he prospered. And Yahweh appeared to Solomon by night and said to him, 'I have heard your prayer and have chosen this place to myself for a house of sacrifice. If I shut up the heavens so that there is no rain, or if I command the house to devour the land, the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people who are called by my name shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sins and will heal their land. Now my eyes shall be open and my ears attend to the prayer that is made in this place. For now I have chosen and hallowed this house, that my name may be there forever, and my eyes and my heart shall be there perpetually. And as for you, if you will walk before me as David your father walked, and do according to all that I have commanded you, and will keep my statutes and my ordinances, then will I establish the throne of your kingdom, according as I have covenanted with David your father, saying, there shall not fail you a man to be ruler in Israel.'" Again, so this was after the temple is completed building, and as I mentioned before, it's after Solomon had prayed, and if you look at verse 1, it says of the same chapter, it says, "When Solomon had made an end of praying, fire came down from heaven and consumed the burnt offering and the sacrifices, and the glory of Yahweh filled the house." Now, I don't know about you, when you think about this awesome sight, it has to fit into one of the great constructions of the ancient world, because there's never been a time when such a thing has occurred, where the glory of Yahweh filled a place as it did in this structure. But what I want to focus on today is really back in verse 14 of this passage. Note that there's a condition here. It says, "If my people who are called by my name," the condition is being called by Yahweh's name. And certainly we all call ourselves by his name organizationally, and we think of ourselves as Yahweh's people, a people who bear his name. Note that the first requirement is they shall humble themselves and pray. Humble themselves. Humility is the first requirement that's given. Look over in Micah chapter 6, because this will be the focus of what we'll consider today. Micah chapter 6, beginning with verse 6. "With what shall I come before Yahweh and bow myself before the high Elohim? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will Yahweh be pleased with thousands of rams, or with 10,000s of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul?" All these things are things that people give to Yahweh, especially in the Old Testament era, sacrifices. And we know that in pagan societies, even the firstborn was given literally. And among Yahweh's people, the firstborn was given typically, as that firstborn was supposed to be the one who was given to the service of Yahweh. But down in verse 8 it says, "He has showed you, O man, what is good, and what does Yahweh require of you, but to do justly and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your Elohim." Again, walking humbly with Yahweh is vital to our relationship with him. Let's look also over in Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy chapter 10, we'll begin reading with verse 12. "And now, Israel," once again, this is a list of what Yahweh requires. "And now, Israel, what does Yahweh your Elohim require of you? But to fear Yahweh your Elohim, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, and to serve Yahweh your Elohim with all your heart and with all your soul, to keep the commandments," and of course that first portion reminds us of the Shema, "to keep the commandments of Yahweh and his statutes, which I command you this day, for your good." These things are given to us for our own benefit, for our good. "Behold, to Yahweh, your Elohim, belongs heaven and the heaven of heavens, the earth with all that is in it." All the things that exist belong to Yahweh to begin with. "Yet Yahweh had a delight in your fathers to love them, and he chose his seed after them, even you above all peoples as at this day. Circumcise, therefore, the foreskin of your heart, and be no more stiff-necked." Now, we don't see the term humility or humble there, but it's difficult to think of a person who has a soft, circumcised heart and not consider that he is not arrogant. The softness of the heart implies humility because it implies the ability and the willingness to cut away any portion of ourselves that is in direct opposition to Yahweh's will. And that's exactly what humility is: cutting away those things that are displeasing to Yahweh so that we can do his will. The title of this is simply "Humility Comes First." As we saw over in 2 Chronicles 7, it was the first requirement, the first attribute mentioned that Yahweh required among his people. Now let's look at just several passages here briefly this morning. First of all, we'll look over in Proverbs 15, verse 33. Proverbs 15:33 reads, "The fear of Yahweh is the instruction of wisdom, and before honor goes humility." Humility comes first. If we don't necessarily seek to be honored, but those people who are honored are first humble people. The reading of this is very interesting in different versions, and I elected to bring the NIV version and read a couple of these verses from there. In the NIV, this verse reads, "The fear of Yahweh teaches a man wisdom, and humility comes before honor." You know, people who we once again think of in an honorable position really are humble people. Now, there are times when we honor or respect a person who isn't humble. But you know, it doesn't take long before we recognize that they don't deserve the honor and respect that we give them because the humility isn't there. And what happens is they take advantage of the circumstances and situation, and they lose, I'll say, the right to be honored, to be respected in such a way. Turn over also to Proverbs 18. Remember now, we're speaking about this really as it applies to us, to Yahweh's people, to a people who want to exist in the temple and who want to form a portion of the temple. Proverbs 18:22 says, I'm sorry, 18:12. Maybe I said that and read the wrong verse. 18:12 is what I want. "Before destruction, the heart of a man is haughty." It's arrogant. You know, before a person does something to destroy themselves, what happens is they arrogantly proceed. So many times they realize they shouldn't, they consider that they shouldn't. People sometimes tell them that they shouldn't, and they don't listen to anyone. They move right ahead anyway. Again, before destruction, the heart of a man, or the heart of man, is hardy, and before honor goes humility. Once again, here in the NIV, it reads this way: before his downfall, a man's heart is proud, but humility comes before honor. You know, people who do things to destroy themselves, once again, go on regardless of the warnings that they receive. And let's not forget that regardless of the individual or the instrument, the source of those warnings is always Yahweh. He's always the one trying to warn us. Proverbs 22:4. Proverbs 22:4 reads, "The reward of humility and the fear of Yahweh is riches and honor in life." Now, the reason we continue to do this faith, to maintain the faith, to walk down this pathway, is not for riches, it's not for honor, but it is for life. We all seek eternal life. We hope that one day Yahweh will grant us entrance into the kingdom of Yahweh, into that age to come. But humility must precede it. Again, in the NIV, it says, "Humility and the fear of Yahweh bring wealth and honor and life." And that's what we seek for. Humility, once again, is the source, is the first thing that we must do if we're going to worship and serve Yahweh properly. Let's look at 1 Peter chapter 5. This section we know fairly well. The passage deals with the ministers, but it also goes further than that when you look at it closely. 1 Peter 5:1. "The elders, therefore, among you, I exhort, who am a fellow elder and a witness of the sufferings of the Messiah, who am also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Tend the flock of Yahweh, which is among you, exercising the supervision, not of constraint." Now, we looked at this just recently, but the admonition for ministers is to take care of the sheep, to look over them and to care for them, to watch over them and to protect them in a loving, caring way. "Not of constraint, but willingly, according to the will of Yahweh, nor yet for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind." There's a preparedness that's required. "Neither as despots over the charge allotted to you," not trying to reign over people, "but lovingly caring for them, making yourselves examples to the flock." You know, it's always stated that if you're going to be a leader, then you lead by example. And so people should look at you and be able to see that you are the way that you're trying to encourage them to be. Whether it's the head of a company, whether it's the head of an organization, whether it's the head of a family, whether you're head of some select group that you're a portion of, anyone who's in that position that wants the other people to behave a certain way, to act a certain way, to accomplish certain things, must first be that way themselves, making yourselves examples to the flock. "And when the chief shepherd shall be manifested, you shall receive the crown of glory that fades not away. Likewise, you younger, be subject to the elder. Yes, all of you gird yourselves with humility." Note, this isn't only now speaking of the ministers. It says, "All of you gird yourselves with humility to serve one another. For Yahweh resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble." Anytime that we exhibit any kind of pride, Yahweh is going to resist any petition we have, any attempt we have to get close to him. But he gracefully deals with those individuals that are humble. You know, we won't turn there, but you can think back to David's petition in Psalm 51. When it says he was when he mentions that he was a broken and a contrite spirit, that's humility. That's saying, "I did something wrong. I'm willing to acknowledge that I did something wrong, and I want to make amends for it as best as I possibly can." That is humility. That is how we have to deal one with another, and especially with Almighty Yahweh. Again, humility is the first thing that we have to concern ourselves with. "Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of Yahweh, that he may exalt you in due time." If you bring yourself down, Yahweh will lift us up. Now, we don't humble ourselves so that we can be lifted up, but that's what he's saying here. Those individuals who humble themselves will be raised up, will be looked upon in a very good light. And, you know, you can think about the people around us once again. And those people who humbly do things are the people that we tend to look at and admire in some kind of way or acknowledge that there's something special about them. If you think about the people that you work around or family members or just general associations, those people that we tend to put in a favorable light tend to be humble people. And that certainly is the case. Casting all your anxiety upon him because he cares for you. You know, we all get anxious. Every single one of us get anxious when we're in a difficult time. That's human nature. But what happens when you're humble is you try calmly. Note I say try and note I say calmly. But you try calmly to relax yourself and you place your trust in Yahweh. That's submitting ourselves to him. That is humility. That is allowing Yahweh to do what he needs to do in our lives and with the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Casting all your anxiety upon him because he cares for you. Be sober. Be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour. And we want to be on guard at all times. And I think this, I'm not going to read through to the end of the passage, but it's interesting that the caution is given to be watchful and cautious right after the concept of humility is given. Because Satan wants us all to be proud and arrogant, as he is. He wants us all to stand up against situations and circumstances, to be stiff-necked, as we saw over in Deuteronomy 10. He wants us to have that kind of an attitude. Because if you have that attitude, you can never listen to Yahweh. You can never bend to his will. You can never allow the part of our heart to be cut away. You know, humility in the scriptures is frequently and closely associated with meekness. Now, there are two different concepts. And that's interesting. I had never really thought about it, but they are two different concepts. If you look in Ephesians 4, we'll see one of the places where the two are mentioned together. Ephesians 4, beginning with verse 1. I, therefore, the prisoner in Yahweh, note he's calling himself a prisoner, someone who is captive to Yahweh, someone who is in bonds to Yahweh. Now, we don't think of ourselves as being in some kind of negative position when we're in that case. But the prisoner in Yahweh beseech you that you walk worthily of the calling with which you were called. How? With all lowliness and meekness. The word lowliness is another term for humility. In the scriptures, if you look the word up, it's essentially the same term that's translated in other passages as humbleness or humility. With all lowliness and meekness. Meekness in the Greek does not imply what we normally think of in English. There's no word. They couldn't find a word to translate it, so they used meek. When we use the word meek today, we think of a person who cowers in fear. And that's not what this term meekness relates to. And this is kind of a sidebar to humility, but the terms are related. In Greek, what it really does imply is it refers to not being occupied with yourself at all. It refers to not being occupied with self. And that's what meekness relates to. So you can see how humility and meekness go together. When you put self down, it's not that you're putting down yourself down out of fear. It's not that we're putting ourselves down because we're concerned that we can't do something. It's because self isn't as important as caring for others, for example, as obeying Yahweh's will, for example, as doing what he asks us to do. And this is truly a humble person. Look at Jacob chapter 4. Jacob or James chapter 4, beginning with verse 4. You adulteresses, and if you remember, this is where he is really admonishing them for their inability to get along, as there's fighting and arguing and bickering among the people. And then he calls them, you adulteresses, do you not know that the friendship of the world is enmity with Yahweh?
Now, does that mean that we shouldn't be close to anyone who is not a true worshiper? I don't think it necessarily means that. But what I do think it means is that we don't need to spend our time trying to overly establish relationships with situations that take us away from the worship of Yahweh. That's really the key. The whole point in everything that we do in life must be to draw ourselves nearer to Yahweh first, and those people that we come around nearer to Yahweh second. So if we withdraw from everybody around us, we can have no influence on the people that we come in contact with. So it's wrong to say we shouldn't get close to other people. It's wrong to say we shouldn't have, quote unquote, friends in the world. But what the problem is, we shouldn't allow those friends to encourage us to do something that is opposite, that is in direct opposition to Yahweh's will. Whoever therefore would be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of Yahweh. Or do you think that the scripture speaks in vain? Does the spirit which he made to dwell in us long to envy? Did Yahweh make us envious people, envying the people of the world or their circumstances? The case should be no. That is not how Yahweh's spirit works. But he gives more grace. Therefore, the scripture says, Yahweh resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. We read that already. Therefore, be subject to Yahweh, but resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Subject ourselves to Yahweh's will, resist the devil. You know, it is a simple matter. We've heard this so many times over the years. It is a simple matter to obey Yahweh, because he says, do this and don't do that. You can look and you say, yep, that fits in, or no, that doesn't. It is simple. It is not easy. Because resisting something is a difficult thing to do sometimes. Our human nature sometimes propels us into a mind frame where we want to do things that we know are wrong, that we know don't fit within Yahweh's will. And so we have to fight. That's the warring in the members that Paul speaks about. We have to constantly struggle to resist the attractions that Satan places before us. But we're still required to do so. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. If we resist, he goes away. Draw near to Yahweh, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. Be afflicted and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. And what he's speaking of here is, as we cleanse ourselves and as we draw near to Yahweh, we do afflict ourselves. We mourn. We weep. We're sorrowful for the things that we have done wrong. And that's the attitude that we have in approaching him. And then finally, in verse 10, it says, humble yourselves in the sight of Yahweh, and he shall exalt you. So many times we find ourselves in situations, and what we want to do, what man wants to do, is to push himself out front, to make himself the center of attention sometimes. And that's wrong, because Yahweh will make us the center of the most important thing in the world, the kingdom of Yahweh, if in fact we remain faithful. And by being the center of the kingdom of Yahweh, I'm not saying we're the most important person there or the most important being. That isn't the point. The making us the center really shows the importance or the value that Yahweh places on us. And that's really an awesome thing to consider, that Yahweh can look at any of us and consider that we're valuable to him. But that will never happen if we're not humble. As we consider one final point, let's consider Yahshua the Messiah. You can't consider humility without considering him. Turn over to Philippians 2. Philippians 2, beginning with verse 1. If there is any exhortation in the Messiah, if any consolation of love, if any fellowship of the Spirit, if any tender mercies and compassion, make full my joy that you be of the same mind, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Now there should be a cohesiveness among Yahweh's people. Regardless of where we are and regardless of the circumstances, there should be a type of approach that we all take that is similar. It's similar to what Yahshua the Messiah, the approach that Yahshua the Messiah took, and it's similar to what each one of the others would take. Doing nothing through faction or through vainglory. See, the vanity, notice notice that it speaks of the unity there, but it also speaks of the pride that comes with vanity, through vainglory. But in lowliness, humility of mind, each counting other better than himself. So everyone in the room, everyone here, should look to everyone else and think of that person as better than he or she is. We all have that obligation. It doesn't make any distinction between whether a person is a husband or a wife or a minister or not a minister or anything else. Each counting other better than himself. Not looking each of you to his own things. There's the concept of meekness coming in there, where we take self totally out of it. But each of you also to the things of others. Have this mind in you, which was also in the Messiah, Yahshua, who, existing in the form of Elohim, counted not the being on an equality with Yahweh a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a servant, being made in the likeness of men, and being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself, becoming obedient even to death, yes, the death of the torture stake. And let me pause here and consider something. You know, regardless of what position we have in life, the humble person recognizes that position and respects it. We all have different positions. He or she always executes whatever responsibilities go along with that position. We can think of the wife-husband relationship. We can think of the parent, child-parent relationship, the employee-employer relationship, the layperson-minister relationship, the servant-master relationship, and the man-Yahweh relationship. And if you notice, each of these I inverted. I inverted because man tends to want to take the position of the other person. We all want to take someone else's position. So I put them in the opposite order intentionally. Yahshua didn't do that. That's what this passage is speaking of. Yahshua didn't do that. And you know what else he didn't do? When it came time to offer his life, he knew before he came down here what was going to be required. He also knew that man was going to reject him. Remember, everybody denied him right there at the end, even the disciples. And yet he still did the task placed before him. Now, we all have tasks that we have to do. Husbands and wives together, children and parents, employees, employers, etc., etc., etc. We all have responsibilities in whatever position we have. Whether or not the corresponding person does their job should have no bearing on our desire, on our willingness to do our job. Because once again, Yahshua didn't say, well, those people aren't doing the right thing. I'm not going in there giving my life for them. He didn't take that attitude or approach. He humbly said, this is what I have to do. This is what Yahweh expects for me to do, and therefore I'm going to do it. That's a difficult thing to consider things in that light. But that is putting self at a very low estate. That's controlling yourself and putting yourself in order, putting yourself in the proper position. We'll finish reading through the end of this passage there, because it says, Therefore also Yahweh highly exalted him and gave to him the name which is above every name, that in the name of Yahshua every knee should bow, of things in heaven and things on earth and under the earth, and that every tongue should confess that Yahshua the Messiah is master to the glory of Yahweh the Father. At some point, we hope to have a place in the kingdom of Yahweh. How could we ever hope to have that if we can't humbly submit ourselves, first of all, to him, second of all, to all of the circumstances and situations that we're in on this earth, every single one of them, whether they're work relationships, whether they're familial relationships, or whether they're your social relationships, we have an obligation to be humble people. Humility comes first. Humility should be the first thing that we're always striving for daily in our lives. And may Yahweh bless us as we strive faithfully to observe his commandments, to do his will, and to humbly seek his face. May Yahweh bless you.